AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
USC, Compton, Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer county. So if you keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gonna tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gonna tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment. We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, and I'm with my dogs.
Big J.
Jip. And you know, back in the 90s, The Source was a real pivotal magazine. It was motherfuckers getting record deals off out of there. If you got put in the unsigned hype, it was on. You was on the crack and you was on your way. And I remember, man, you know, as a dude coming up in the business back then, that was our goal, to try to get motherfuckers up in the... Everybody's goal as a rapper was getting the Source magazine. And today, man, we got the founder of the Source magazine up here, man, Mr. Dave Mays, man. What's cracking, man?
Everything's good, man. I'm really happy to be here with you guys, man.
Man, we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk to you about, brother.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's a whole bunch of stuff, man. First off, man, I like to start with the basics all the time, because you see these interviews sometimes, man, and people don't ask the most basic questions. I'm like, why he didn't ask them this? How did you come up with the Source magazine, man? What was on your mind when you thought of it?
Was it like a vision you had? I mean, because rap was kind of early right then, you know what I'm saying, with the publications and everything. So, you know, what made you want to get interested in that?
Well, I guess I should tell, like, the full backstory. Basically, it starts with me just growing up in D.C. I'm born and raised in D.C. Just, you know, going through the public schools, just got exposed to the, you know, the music and the culture of the city at a young age that I fell in love with. Now, D.C., as you guys know, is, you know, Go-Go was really, you know, the dominant music in the 80s there. So I was, you know, heavily into Go-Go. I did hear, you know, a lot of hip hop on the radio. So Rapper's Delight and The Message was always a big song with me. But when I graduated high school, I went to Harvard. And when I got to Harvard, which is right outside Boston, you know, they weren't fucking with Go-Go up there. And that's really when I became 100% more just focused on hip hop. And I started a radio show on a Harvard station. They were playing classical music. And I had met a guy. It was like nobody at Harvard that I could, you know, get along with or felt comfortable with. It was a weird thing when I got there. But there was this one kid that I met who was playing rap music out of his dorm, this kid named John Schechter. He was from Philly, and he was into rap. So we ended up joining the radio station, starting a radio show that I did for 4 years, and it got really popular in the Boston area. The Source really comes along in between, like at the end of my sophomore year. I had been trying to sell sponsorships of the radio show and going out to local businesses and saying, hey, you know, take out a sponsorship. They were basically like, you know, who's listening to a hip hop show on Harvard Station? Like, you know, I have to find a way to prove my audience. So I start building a mailing list of my listeners throughout the Boston area, because I know I got people calling in, and you know, this is 1 a.m. on Friday nights, but back then, and you know, that was the only place you could hear rap music, you know, in a lot of cities, you know, didn't have radio stations that were playing rap. Anyway, The Source started as a newsletter that as I started building a mailing list of all these people listening to my show. And that was the way I was put in a database to go out and try to get more sponsors for the show. In the process of doing that, I'm answering the phones. People want to know what's going on. When's the new, you know, Big Daddy Kane single coming out, and who produced this, and what's going on with that? And, you know, people wanted to know information. So all that ended up kind of sparking the idea. Instead of, you know, selling sponsors of my radio show, I'm going to create the newsletter. I'm going to put the news and information in it that I'm getting. I got relationships with different labels now. You know, I'm dealing with all the labels in New York and LA that have rap music, so I can get the music sent up to my college, you know, station and get the new singles first and all that. And it started like that, just with a idea to provide news and information to the hip hop community, you know, because there was nowhere to find any of that information.
Okay, so you came with that, man, and then it just progressively got bigger. Like, what was the defining moment that made it go like, bam, like we cooking with grease now?
I mean, I've gotten asked that a lot of times. I mean, the Source like really grew, just it grew fast and steadily and just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as the years, you know, went on. So, you know, by the late 80s, I mean, before I left college in the summer of 1990, I mean, we probably had, you know, at least 500 record stores around the country selling the Source by that time. And, you know, it kept, you know, we passed one accomplishment, but it was for me, it was always, I'm already thinking ahead, you know. Right. After that first newsletter, somebody ended up giving me a book about Rolling Stone magazine that I didn't know anything about at the time. And, you know, I read the history of how Rolling Stone was started, saw a lot of similarities between rock and roll and hip hop. And so that was what I'm going to build a Rolling Stone of hip hop, you know, was my first idea. And then even that changed as time went on and I started getting into, you know, television and other parts of the media, trying to become more of a diversified, you know, media and brand. Because brand, that was different from magazines. A lot of magazines didn't think of themselves as brands back in those days. So,
yeah, so you mentioned that you went to Harvard. What was your mama and your daddy thinking when you came home talking about, I'm going to start up a magazine if they paid all that money for you to go to Harvard?
Another thing, like you were, not to cut you off still, yeah, but like you said, the defining moment, what you say that was attributed to, you know, because, you know, rap was small. You know, you started off with a newsletter, whatever. Would you say, like, with the growth of rap, more people wanted to get more inquired about rappers and records and basically what was going on? So the Source was basically that that hip hop, like you say, Rolling Stone in effect, because even before I started rapping, that was a place where I went to look forward to the next record or who was the new MC or whatever, even before I started rapping at a young age.
Yeah.
It didn't bother y'all when, like, you building the Source, but then you had the hardcore rappers. Those days, rappers didn't talk to, didn't just mingle with white boys, just just because. So did you have to, did people have to grow, meaning the rappers had to grow and get to know you, to talk to you and to want to be a part of the magazine?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I was always good at building relationships with all types of people, you know, and that was always, you know, a big part of what made the Source successful was building those, you know, those relationships across different, you know, aspects, from whether it's the artists themselves, the managers, the artists' friends, the label executives. You know, I just, you know, really just tried to build relationships across, you know, across the board. And so I was able to, you know, also kind of get folks to sort of, you know, believe in what the Source was doing, you know, and get a lot of support from the labels and the artists, because it was like, you know, we're the kind of championing of hip hop, you know, the voice for hip hop. You know, I think we had a lot to do with helping it grow and, you know, emerge throughout the 1990s and, you know, become bigger in a lot of different ways. The Source has so many different, you know, things that it impacted.
So was it a one man show? Was it just you the whole ride? You build it, you the founder?
I mean, no. In the beginning, it was me. I'm the one that came up with, you know, the Source, did the first one. Then while I was in college, I ended up having three other partners. The guy, John Schechter, I mentioned, and two other guys, Ed Young and James Bernard. So I had three other partners that I cut into the company, and we all worked together up until like maybe 6 years in. Then I had a split with two of those guys. Those guys, you know, moved on. And it was sometime in, you know, in those years, right around 95, when I brought Benzino in as, you know, a partner with me. That had been my friend. I had been, you know, knowing him from Boston, from the music, you know, from my radio show before there was a Source. You know, he had a local rap group, and, you know, we got to know each other. And, you know, so I had helped them get their record deals and things like that. But, you know, the Source was my thing that I had been doing for a while. But, yeah, there was a few other partners along the way. But, yeah.
Just let me lean back on that one question I asked you. What was your mama and your daddy thinking the whole time?
Right. That was a good question. Yeah. I mean, I did get some flack from that. You know, there was a little bit of that. Like,
I mean, shit is rap. You fucking with rap, what are you, of course.
We're sending you to Harvard, and you're up here, like, doing a rap radio show, and you're trying to do a rap magazine or whatever. You know what I mean? You're supposed to be boom. But they couldn't tell me nothing, man. Once I got going with it, I was so passionate about it. You know, like I said, I always have been an entrepreneur. So I was like, man, this can be big, you know. This is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I loved and the music and the culture. I'm living this every day. So, you know, shit, it all just, you know, came together.
Now, you coming into hip-hop culture. And at that time, man, hip-hop wasn't like it is now. You know, we always had gangsterism, but it was more behind the scenes. You might see a motherfucker rapping about chicks on his record, but he could be the most gangster motherfucker in the world. So you being a white dude coming in here, man, from, you know, Harvard University and everything, did you ever catch any flack from the brothers at first when you first came in?
Not really, no. I mean, I've always felt, you know, people have accepted me, you know, in the black community and in any community, but particularly, you know, in hip hop. You know, I never really got made to feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's one of the things about hip hop. You know, hip hop is this, you know, it's a culture, and it's something that if you're, you know, true to yourself, you know, we accept you no matter exactly who you are.
Hip hop is universal, man.
That's what it is, and it's all about authenticity, too.
We never had no color lines as far as rap concerned or hip hop was concerned. I mean, shit, everybody liked the motherfucking Beastie Boys. You get me? Right. I mean, back in that era, you couldn't even contest because, shit, you could have told any motherfucker, them some motherfucking niggas right there. Yeah. I don't give a fuck. Before you heard them and the way they carried themselves and the flow and was able to hang with Run and them. So we as hip hop artists, we never crossed those color lines as far as hip hop was concerned. If you were true hip hop, again, third base. You get me? Sure. True hip hop to us. Sure. So that was shit I used to play. Like, it wasn't anything. So I don't think we ever looked upon it like, you know, the color lines. Now, if it was some corny shit, right, then of course, yeah, we had to cross that motherfucking line.
Yeah. For real. And that's what I think with anything else, man. People like authenticity. Yeah. But that's what I felt when I looked at the source. I said, okay, these motherfuckers is on point. Like I told you, I would gauge, because I had a record store at one time too. I would gauge on what I would buy in my store based on what these motherfuckers rated certain albums. I would be looking like, okay, this got 2.5 mics. This shit's some trash. I'm not fucking with it. Because most of the time it was, but you had to earn that trust. You know, I earned that trust and I said, okay, this is really the Bible for hip hop. This is the guide, you know? Yeah. And one of the things, we go fast forward a little bit, right? Sure. Go fast forward a little bit. New York hip hop is killing it. You know, New York is like the epicenter. It's the genesis for hip hop. That's the Garden of Eden for hip hop. Everything was kind of birthed from there, right? Then you get some cats on the West Coast, on the other side of the country, starting to rise. Did you see the tension? Did you feel like the competitive spirit on the East Coast when you was over there, when the West Coast started making noise?
What I always saw and what I always noticed was just the way that, you know, people from New York had a certain, you know, just a certain arrogance and a certain way of not really taking, you know, rappers and rap from other parts of the country very seriously from early on. And that created, you know, like this divide where people was like, you know, F them, you know what I mean? Like, our shit is, you know, is banging out here. I don't know what you're talking about. So, you know, I think I just really tried as hard as I could to try to, you know, bring in people that, you know, had an open ear to music as much as possible. And, you know, I think we did a pretty good job with that over the years. Again, you know, we had our ups and downs and our hits and misses here and there. But, you know, I think overall, you know, we really focused on that.
I mean, I grew up on New York rap. I mean, you can't say that our early stages of hip hop were very corny compared to fucking New York hip hop. You get me? Mm-hmm. Thus, you know, when
corny are different.
Our shit was corny.
Oh, it was bad at first.
Our shit was corny. I mean, if you want to compare dudes like Grandmaster Flash and you want to compare people like T. La Rock in the beginning or the Fat Boys or Curtis Blow or Spoonie G or Just Ice compared to fucking the Wrecking Crew and fucking Bobby Jimmy and the Critters and shit like that, we had fucking bullshit rap.
It didn't start getting good over here to
Todd didn't really, my nigga Todd, you know, Todd gave an ear and an avenue for niggas like us who were in the neighborhoods, who didn't have that significant motherfucker on the mic like a Melly Mel or those type of motherfuckers who spoke about, you know, the jungle and the message and the shit like that.
So you basically saying that when it came to California rappers, New York didn't have no songs where they wanted to play, like being a DJ and having, you know, doing a radio show. Mm-hmm. They didn't have good music to put out from the West Coast.
Hell no.
No, not really.
We
started getting recognition around really the easy stage.
Okay, question for you. So when you had your radio station, did you play West Coast music?
Absolutely.
Or you did? It was like mixed?
Yes.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
That's how we got a lot of our breaks because
thing about Boston that was different. Boston was a city different from most of the East Coast, where like if I was in New York or Philly or something like that, I probably wouldn't have got exposed. But
yeah,
Boston,
yeah,
they fuck with, you know, Ghetto Boys. They fuck with NWA. They fuck with all kind of music. They weren't like just on a New York shit.
What kind of rappers did you like from the West Coast then?
I mean, Easy, NWA. I mean, you know. shit, those were the, you know.
it wasn't too much.
You know, it wasn't there in the beginning. There wasn't too much of West Coast rap. I mean, I came out after the fact of Easy and NWA.
About 90, right?
Yeah, I came around 90, 91. But like you said, before then, we didn't really have no identity as West Coast hip hop.
And bro, as much as I respect what them dudes did, but like the Dream Team that, yes, we're here, it was just all corny. No, you know what I mean? It was kind of like just corny, but them was big records out here.
It was.
Nonetheless.
Because we had no identity for hip hop. So to us, when you listen to the Wrecking Crew Turn Off Your Lights, or you listen to the LA Dream Team is here, or you listen to some Bobby Jimmy and the Critters and shit like that, some motherfucking parody rap, you get me? Fuck it. I'm gonna take the song Rumors and make another song out of it, like some Weird Al Yankovic shit. You know, we didn't get our respect. We didn't get our respect. Until Easy came, and then Easy started talking about, like I said, we had Todd and Mixmaster Spade, but that didn't get mainstream like Easy did. Once Easy broke, then we got Tila. And then we got motherfucking Cube and motherfuckers to follow after. Dub C, us, CMW. And then everything that trickled down and people start going, okay, these West Coast motherfuckers got some flavor. But up until then, man, shit, everything I listened to came from the fucking East Coast.
Yeah.
I used to run a Paramount swap meet and just buy nothing but East Coast fucking 12
inches. I think we all did, because it wasn't really nothing at that time that was, because I liked the lyrical shit. Really, one of the first lyrical cats that I heard from the early days, I always thought King T was a rapping motherfucker.
Yeah, King T used to rap.
Yeah, King T was a rapping motherfucker. You know what I mean? King T was a rapper motherfucker. And I heard a rumor that actually King T had I heard Biggie Smalls was a King T fan. And when you listen back to them early records, you can kind of hear it a little bit. The way, you know, King T, because King T didn't, everybody was rapping on the one back then, kind of like, right? King T used to lay back in the track like he was just in the Cadillac, like he laid back in it, and you just pictured it, and it was like, he was real visual, like even with his album, with, you know, 12 gauge walking on the side, that was some pivotal shit. So I want to know from you, what was the vibe back then? Because you was on the East Coast. You was an East Coast-based magazine. When that shit started making noise, was it a lot of hate really in the air? Like, oh, that shit ain't shit. It's going to go away.
You mean the West Coast?
Yeah, like the far as West Coast music.
I mean, I wasn't really tuned into that. Like I said, I already had an open mind, you know. So, I mean, I'm sure there were people, you know, in New York and around, you know, our office or whatever, that might, you know, felt that way. But I didn't.
See, that's what I want to know. Don't give us the politically correct answers. I want to know if it was a motherfucker that worked in that office, like, the Chronic, man, it's some bullshit. I don't want to hear this, all this. Yeah, okay.
I know by that time, we was on point as far as music concerned. By the time the Chronic came out.
Chronic, was one of the most, you know, important, even influential turning points.
Exactly.
In the source with that cover with Dre with the gun to his head. You know, we put that out before the Chronic came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when, you know, I went and tracked down Dre. I had to go through Suge and got them to agree to give us the exclusive interview and do that cover. Heard the album. Was going crazy over that album before, you know, it came out. So we dropped that cover like a month or two before the album actually dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that really helped blow the source up even bigger. That's one of our, that's probably my favorite cover.
I got that mag at the house. That's one of the ones I collected.
I want to know, was there any tension? Because, you know, y'all used to rate the records, give people the mics and all that. Did you ever have any tension over the situations of rating people's albums?
Don't give us the political direct album, man. We want to hear the real. This is the Gangsta Chronicles. We want to hear that, you know.
You know, because a motherfucker get that album and, I mean, get that magazine and open it, and you get to the albums, and then you see four mics on some, and you see three mics, and you see two and a half. I know motherfuckers be like, man, two and a half? Right. What the fuck, man?
Right. I mean, by and large, as a whole, you know, honestly, we didn't have those issues. I mean, people didn't, you know, we had a certain level of respect, you know, in the industry. And, you know, I think that didn't really happen very often.
No, because I got four mics, so I was good. I was good.
They said, I got my four. I'm cool.
There were some moments in, like, when I said how, like, my partners had left in, like, 93, 94, there were some moments where the source started getting into it with artists. I don't know if you remember. There was an Ice-T beef going on.
Yeah.
There was a Public Enemy. Cube actually dissed the source on Hand of the Dead Body. Yeah, it was just a whole bunch. Oh, Cypress Hill. There was a whole thing going on between Cypress Hill and the source where we really helped blow Cypress Hill up. Like, you know, before they even came out, we were pushing them in the magazine. We loved Cypress Hill, helped blow them up. But then there was a falling out between them and some of these editors at the source that were writing shit, whatever. I had a whole thing with them where they ran up on me down in Miami at one of the music conferences, you know, behind that. And, you know, nothing happened. I was able to talk to all of them. It was like, you know, 15 of them with, you know, all the Samoans they ran with.
Yeah.
You know,
the Booyah Brothers.
Yeah. I was down there by myself at this music conference, you know, but anyway, you know, so stuff like that, people definitely took the rating seriously, but, you know, we didn't have to deal with too much drama, fortunately, over the years.
That's a good thing, because hip-hop can be kind of like, you know, it gets, you know, I know a lot of rappers, man, and some cats take their stuff serious, and they'd like to push their line like that. So you never had nobody run up in the office, man? I'm like, what the hell going on, man? This shit.
I mean...
It's over with now. You can tell us now, bro. Let's break some news. You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is a story that I've talked about, and that... me and him talked about, I think, on one of his shows. But Dame Dash, there was a situation where, you know, Jay-Z was, we were supposed to give Jay-Z the cover. Now, when we did a cover, like, we wanted it to be exclusive, meaning, okay, we're going to give you the cover. Like, we got to get the first dibs, be the first magazine, the first interview, and we need to get that out there, right, like, when the album drops. And then after that, next month or whatever, you could do other, you know, other types of things. But, shit, what was I saying about the exclusive?
Dame.
Yeah, so we were going to give Jay the cover, and we had agreed to do it. It was going to be exclusive. And I think the album got pushed back, something like that. And the next thing I know, the very first issue of XXL magazine comes out. And it has Jay-Z on the cover. And, you know, I'm like, well, damn, you know, we had an arrangement, you know, to have the exclusive for Jay-Z. And now he's on the, you know, not, you know, at the time, XXL was supposed to be this big competitor to the source. And he's on the cover. So, you know, I decided I wasn't going to do the cover. I pulled that back on it. There was some... you know, drama behind that. And it ended up one day, Damon Dash and about four or five guys ran up into the source office. I wasn't there. I was out somewhere, but I got the phone call and they were like in the lobby, you know, trying to cause some ruckus or whatever. But, you know, we had our security, you know, and guys there, and basically, you know, everybody left peacefully, you know, and, you know, that was like one of the memorable ones, but it wasn't nothing like crazy. Again, we fortunately didn't have any like crazy type situations.
No issues with Suge Knight?
No, I always had a great relationship with Suge. He was always, you know, respectful to me and very supportive. You know, like from that first cover with Dre, you know, he's really helped make that happen. And, even with the, you know, with the 95 Source Awards, you know, a lot of people don't know. He spent like over $100,000 on that set that opened up the show. You know, when Death Row had the jail cells and everybody performed. You know, we didn't have that kind of money. This is our first time ever televising the Source Awards. And he's really the only label that stepped up and spent that kind of money. A lot of the other labels supported. That was the whole way I was able to make it happen, was because of the relationships I had with the Suges, the Jay Princes, the Puffs, you know, the Russell Simmons, the Lior Cohens, all the different players, you know, to get everybody to come together, you know, and do it. But, you know, that really made the show look on television way doper. You know, that opening set was, you know, one of the most dope probably performances ever on an award show. So, no, I never really had any drama with
it. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Now, James just did something. I don't know if he did it on purpose or not. He just landed on something that we got to talk about in length and detail. That's Source Awards because, in my opinion, Death Row Records probably had the best performance ever at the Source Awards. When they came out with all the jail cells on the thing and everybody was out there, and you see RBX come out, because for some of them rappers that was on Death Row, that was people's first time actually getting to see them, you know, perform. Mm-hmm. So when they came out on stage and everything, what was going through your mind when that whole night happened? Was it chaos? Was it tension in the air, man, the thick? Because we right in the middle of the war almost then. That's like right at the start of the war.
It was gang of tension. I was there.
Yeah, well,
I presented an award there with Aaliyah. Right. That night.
Yeah, that was an interesting night.
There was a gang of tension. I had beef with Quick that night.
Right.
Yeah, it was tension in the building that
night. Oh, because that was the night that MCA, because he was up there with the whole crew of people, mm-hmm. and you were sitting right in the stage.
I was right in the front.
Yeah, I didn't know they were going to do that, though. I would have... You know, I would have said something. They kind of threw that in because that wasn't part of the rehearsal.
Yeah, they tried to diss me.
Oh, about the wife or something.
Yeah, they tried to diss me on stage during the show. And we was ready to fight. I had about 8 niggas with me.
Fiance, they did something about the fiance. Somebody recognized the fiance or some bullshit. Mm-hmm. And you heard the woos and the woes when he said it. Mm-hmm. So people was picking.
But
what I will say is there wasn't tension going in there. Like a lot of people think about, you know, kind of what you were saying, like they think about the Source Awards as like the start of, you know, where things, you know, go left and everything that happens after that. But, you know, I don't look at it like that. It's like, you know, there was no tension. Pac was in jail, and going into that night, nobody knew that Pac was coming out and going to be on death row.
Right.
Okay, so Pac had his drama with you know, Big and Bad Boy that had been going on while he was in jail. But me putting the Source Awards together, you know, I didn't see any, you know, beefs. There was no problems at any point, you know, between Death Row and Bad Boy at this point. Now, you know, and then there's differing, you know, opinions. Like one of the things about that show, like that that I noticed is, you know, when you watch the 95 Source Awards, Bad Boy, you know, the Death Row opens it and kills it with that performance. Uh-huh. But before Suge goes on stage, there's a Bad Boy performance, a medley where he had everybody there too, you know, Craig Mack, Total, Big, Little Kim, Junior Mafia. But at the beginning of that, Puff's kneeling on the stage and he's saying this on the spotlight, you know, I live in the East and I die in the East. You know, now that's before Suge goes on stage. So I never had the opportunity to have this conversation with Suge. I hope, you know, that I will one day to find this out. But in my mind, I'm thinking like that might have been something, you know, that made him feel a certain way, you know.
Probably definitely kicked it off.
Yeah.
Does it sound like you're throwing darts then? You know what I mean? When you say, you know,
right.
I live on the West and die on the West, you know what I'm saying?
We all know everything, you know, that happened. But like we had talked about, I guess, before we really got on air, it's like the real situation between Death Row and Bad Boy doesn't start until a month or so later when, you know, Jake gets killed down in Atlanta. That's really the start of the violence, the drama, everything going crazy from there.
Now, you know, we can talk about that a little bit because I didn't even know James at the time, but I remember when Jake got killed, it was a lot of, like, it was some real cats in the street talking about that because I remember one of my good homeboys, you know, Crawford, he was mad as hell, tears flowing down his eyes. He came by my house when that happened.
You know? Jake was a real good dude, man. I knew Jake very well. You know, he was doing promotion for Death Row, and we used to, you know, talk a lot, and I would go see him when I came out, you know, visit out here, and, you know, I had a lot of love for Jake. So, yeah, that was, that hurt, you know, when we lost him.
Now, what's going through your mind, man? Because I've had them situations, you know, to where you're sitting home listening to something, you know, you're there, you're listening to it, and it's like in the moment, it ain't like you can stop it because all this stuff is actually happening right now. When you saw Suge go up there and say, and you knew where he was going, if you don't want the executive producer dancing all in the videos, was your heart just beating like, oh, man, it's about to go down?
I mean, you know, of course I was like, oh, man, what, you know, yeah, the room, definitely. You know, the room got loud, you know, because, you know, he kind of got booed, you know, because it's 5,000 people in there. You got maybe not even 1,000 in the front. That's the industry people. Uh-huh. But the rest is people from New York.
Exactly.
You know, who bought tickets to sit in the back and upstairs and everything. So, you know, I was in the back of the theater, like just walking around. I would, you know, be just trying to check the temperature, see what was going on out in the crowd. So I kind of remember, you know, hearing that and the commotion. And I, you know, made a beeline to get backstage and, you know, Suge and his guys, like the back of the theater in the garden, it's like stairs that go up and down to different, you know, levels of the backstage and dressing rooms and shit like that. I just remember going over on that side and it was like 50 guys just running up and down the stairs, like, you know, kind of causing a ruckus, just yelling, screaming, whatever. And then Puff was over on the other side of the stage and I went over to the other side of the stage. He had a bunch of people around him and he was really upset about it. And, you know, but he decided to kind of take the higher ground, you know, and not, you know, respond or whatever. And he calmed down and, you know, so there wasn't no, you know, there was, you know, there was tension, but there wasn't no, it wasn't even a punch thrown that night that I've ever heard of, you know. And sometimes people just make it out like it was much more and make it out, you know, like that's really what caused everything that happened afterwards. And, you know, to me, that's part of the history that, you know, I want to try to get told correctly and get out there.
Yeah, because I've heard through the years, I've heard about a girl claimed that she got slapped with a bottle or something like that outside the Source of War. Somebody got cracked with a bottle or something like that. So that wasn't true.
No, I don't think I don't think I witnessed any actual scrapping or actual fighting. So, and that's but it was serious tension.
And that's
serious tension.
And that's a good thing, man. So now the war is on. And you're right. It just didn't start that night. It had been bubbling kind of because if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, James, But Shug and Puffy was actually hanging out pretty tough at one point, wasn't they?
Yep.
They was hanging out, you know, they was boys, so that probably was Puff shot like, man, this is supposed to be my man, and he up here, you know what I'm saying? Dissing or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
It was at that point, Shug wanted to control.
Yeah, Jack, why did it, like I said, I never had no problems with Shug. I've had talks with Shug and all that. What what sparked him to do that night?
It was just a takeover. It was just, you know, I'm going to step on people's toes. I don't know what it was. I think Shug wanted somebody, Puppy, and Puppy was like, that ain't happening. You know, he actually stood up to him. And that was a sign, like, who the fuck this nigga think he is? So Shug felt a certain kind of way. And then shit just started happening. I think it was more he say, she say bullshit that was going back and forth from New York to us. And Shug was getting it. And it was only one way to reply to that shit. Okay, let's start poking needles at motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Let's start being disrespectful.
And then you couple that with the Tupac stuff, because I don't heard, it's so many stories about that, you don't know what's true or not true unless you was there. You know what I mean? Because I know Biggie and Tupac at one time was running tough.
Sure.
Because I could swear DJ Bobcat is my god brother. You know, DJ Bobcat is my god brother. And he did a lot of work with Tupac prior to him coming with, you know, Death Row, like them early albums before Tupac became the iconic dude he was. And I remember a few times actually seeing, Biggie with Tupac. But this is back before either of them dudes was who they were. So now the war has kicked off, man. Everything is crazy. How did that impact you doing business? You know, business is still moving on, of course. But now everybody ultra sensitive. So if it looked like you picking a side, have you ever got accused of picking a side?
No. I that's just something I really try to navigate very carefully. Just, you know, that kind of, you know, sensitivity to situations, you know, not wanting to ever be in a position of, you know, inflaming a situation, you know, one of the things that I did in 96, you know, while this stuff was going on, I mean, we couldn't do a Source Awards. That, you know, it just wasn't the environment to do that. So it did put a stop to that. But I did a cover with Shug in the summer of 96, the one, you know, where he's sitting on the Rolls Royce and, you know, get a real in-depth interview. But on the front cover, you'll see, it says Shug Knight, and then in quotes, it ain't no East Coast, West Coast thing, which was a quote from him in the article. So to me, that was something to try to get that message out there to people, like this isn't an East West thing. This is, you know, obviously it's something, you know, it's a personal thing, you know, that was going on. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an example of a way that I would try to, you know, help a situation if I could. You know, like that, and just not get into just printing a bunch of, you know, inflammatory shit that's going to end up, you know, leading to, you know, some real consequences.
Yeah, and people don't do that today because people will print any damn thing not knowing it could get motherfuckers knocked down.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So now we going through all that stuff, man. Then you had a whole thing that happens in the night of Las Vegas. You know, in Las Vegas when Tupac got killed, right? And I think that's when everything kind of slowed down from there. You know what I'm saying? Kind of slowed down. Then Biggie got killed, right? And that's when everybody was kind of like, man, this shit is real. You know what I mean? And that shit, I don't think had nothing to do with no hip hop. I think that was all some other shit going on, you know?
Why not?
Huh?
Why not?
I just don't think it was about the music, man. I think it was a lot of other shit involved in
that. Well, you got two guys just turning and found a way to make money with record sales and everything else, and they called it a beef. So now they got neighborhoods fighting against each other.
That's what I'm saying.
So they turned it into a gang-banging, on wax type of shit. Mm-hmm. So now you got the Bloods and the Crips fighting, and people was loving it, and eating this shit up and buying all the music they can buy from both sides. So what they wanted to do, it worked because they made a gang of money off this shit doing this beef. So you can't go and tell everybody we rehearsing this shit. We ain't really doing it for real, but this is just a show to make money. So all the guys in Compton, all the guys in New York, all the guys in the South Sides and everybody else, they believe in this shit is real.
But that's what I'm saying. So it turned to some street shit.
So when it turned, opposed, but it got music motherfuckers. It got rappers involved. And they've been involved. And they the biggest ones promoting I hate you, fuck you, I'll fuck your wife bullshit. Who's going to react to that? The nigga that they talking about. Mm-hmm. And they eating this shit up. So here they are fighting and going at war. But now it's in the streets.
Yeah, it was some real shit, man. Because me and Big Tyrus, Big Psych, rest in peace. That was like my brother. And, you know, he had told me a story about, you know, seeing Faith in the actual hotel. I won't get into that right now. But it was some real darts being thrown. Like, motherfuckers really was doing some mania-ass shit, you know, trying to one up the next man. So you can't tell me that didn't, you didn't hear all this shit going on behind the scenes when you was up in the magazine, man.
Oh, man. I mean,
Dave, you can keep it real here, man. Let me, I'm gonna get you some ice, man. I'll pour you a drink, man. Go on, let it out, dog.
That nigga still is a goddamn fool, yeah. Lady. Wait, like, let me pour you a drink.
Hey, but look at it though. But for real, the only thing that matters is that he didn't put the bullshit.
Yeah, he didn't print it. And that's one thing I was going to commend you on, because you could have probably sold a couple million extra magazines by just putting certain little things that you don't heard. You could have made a lot of money.
And
you
bullshit controversy.
And you know, us here doing what we do, it's a lot of shit we keep up on the reps that could be shit like, man, if we put this out, it's going to blow up. But we know the repercussions of talking about certain shit. You know, everything ain't cool to put out in public.
That's right.
You know, everything ain't cool to put out in public, man. So this is going on, man. And we go touch on another subject, man. You said you knew Benzino. Y'all friends coming up from when you was in Harvard. Mm-hmm. Then you got people that come out and say that Benzino actually extorted the company from you. And it never seemed like that to me. I always thought that was kind of some bullshit. I said, well, them dudes seem a little too tight for it to be like, he don't look like he extorted the man. Look like they just doing business together. What did that come about? Did that ever cause any tension between you and him?
No. I mean, that was never the situation. And so, I never caused any tension.
Yeah, because Ben is a dude that we know. He's always been cordial with us and everything. And I think sometimes because he has that street edge to him, people try to put one thing on him. Did that ever, like, you never really spoke on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he definitely, you know, people, you know, try to say a lot of different things. Those rumors you're talking about, you know, other things, you know, about him. I mean, me and him had a friendship, and it turned into a business partnership, and, you know, it lasted for a long time. You know, we're not partners now. Breakbeat that we haven't really touched on yet, but that's the new, you know, platform.
Yeah, man. Well, we go land on that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. You know, that's something I'm doing. I have a new partner, a guy named Kendrick Ashton, who's my business partner. That is a really, really great partner. And
It's happened. It always seemed like it was a cordial relationship, because business relationships and stuff like that happens. That's part of life, you know what I mean? That's a part of just doing business sometimes.
Why do they always fall apart, though? Why would... And I just want to understand it. You can go in business and have so many business partners but the relationships don't last. Why?
I think a lot of it is communication, and a lot of it is the outside noise. Because I'm going to tell you, me, you, and eight could be A1, but it ain't us. It's the people getting in his ear. It's the people getting in my ear. The people always on the outside that's getting in your ear. It's always somebody that's outside that want to try to infiltrate their way in the room. And the way they do that sometimes is by going to cause dissension amongst everybody else. You understand what I'm saying? I've seen it all day. So I think as long as you keep your circle tight, man, I think that's how you prevent
that. Yeah, because outside influence will make you think you ain't getting what you deserve.
Yeah.
Straight up. an outside influencer come along and be like, well, shit, I know a motherfucker getting more than what you getting, or a motherfucker getting more popularity.
That's
or
it, right
doing
there, yeah.
this or doing that. It's always the outside influence who manages to always infiltrate and make you start thinking that you're, you know, you're not getting your just due. It's just, it just happens and shit. You know, and then sometimes that leads to motherfucking frustration and irritation between motherfuckers, because now you always thinking like, you got no motherfucking gold chain on, but that motherfucker got a gold chain on. Mm-hmm. You got a nice diamond watch on, but I ain't got no diamond watch on. It's just always, it's always a motherfucker. I don't give a fuck who it is. It's always a motherfucker who always watching what the next motherfucker got. Period.
It's usually a motherfucker that don't have shit. If you ever notice, it ain't never no dude that's doing better, y'all. It's always a guy that's doing
that's
worse.
That's why I asked the question, because you done had, you had four partners doing your, the beginning to now. And every time you lose a partner, do you lose the friendship and all that with it? I mean, this is just a rough business. I know that. But if everybody be 100, the business stay 100.
That's why communication is important.
Don't cheat me, I ain't gonna cheat you.
Because I'm gonna tell you what happened, and I don't even know much about this, but I beg you, I'm willing to bet that those partners that left you early on probably went and started their own, tried to start their own stuff up.
They were the ones that started XXL Magazine. The two guys that left the Source. It was a couple years later, but yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's how it always is. You know, well, I'm gonna go
that's
start.
That's what made that Jay-Z thing even worse. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know.
Yeah. So. XL Magazine still exists?
They are online. It ain't too many magazines that exist. Now everything is online now.
Print.
Okay. You know, they're not in print now. You know, the thing is, and that's what happens. You know, you get guys, but see, you move kind of how I move, because I don't respond to stuff like that. Somebody go do something, God bless them.
Right.
I'm just going to keep on doing me, and I'm going to ignore the outside lines, noise, and that's what you kind of, that's what you did. Yeah. You know, because what you did for hip-hop, no matter what, nobody try to discredit you with, you brought it up a level. It's like, you can honestly say that without the Source Magazine, hip-hop may not be what it is today, because you brought a light to it. It wasn't no internet back then. People couldn't go online, but you put it to another level because you put it in front of people. Because of you, people found out about cats like MCA.
Yeah, and that's why I said in the beginning, it was even a platform for us as artists to be in tune on other motherfucking artists. And what that, oh shit, so-and-so got a record out? Oh, let me check that shit out. Oh, they gave this motherfucker 3.5 mics? Oh, let me check this record out. You can see the latest shit, motherfuckers interviewing and find out about a motherfucker and all that type of shit. So for to be an artist, we waited on the Source Magazine every month for the new issue.
You see the Source Magazine pretty much told you need to step your game up.
Yeah. You could go through the Source Magazine. When you see a motherfucker on that cover, you knew that was the hottest motherfucker at the moment. Then you could read the other articles on where motherfuckers came from, how they got their deals, where motherfuckers grew up, how they was this and that. You know what I'm saying? You could see motherfucking ads about new shit that was coming out. All that type of shit was in there.
But and don't forget, you know, it was the magazine of hip-hop, music, culture, and politics. So, you know, we had the social and the political shit running every magazine. We had the fashion. You know, we had a big influence in the fashion industry.
Fashion works. I did a couple of motherfucking fashion spreads in there for Pele and all them type of
sports. So we had the sports.
Y'all started the sports shit. Yeah. Y'all had the unsigned hype where you could, you know, a lot of motherfuckers that became artists and shit. You knew about them from me because you knew they were unsigned artists. You could read up on
Biggie,
them.
Common.
Exactly. All of them came from unsigned
hype. DMX. Eminem, Conan Noriega, David Banner, Joel Santana, Jay Electronica, Pitbull. I'm forgetting a few of them, but they all, you know, Mad Skills. They all was in unsigned hype before they had their record deals. And we got a lot of those guys, their deals.
And you know what's dope about that, bro? It's a real, you know, of course, y'all was in the East Coast, so... But it's a nice representation of people from all around the country. You got the Midwest in there. You got the Dirty Dirty in there. You got, you know, you got all these different people. You got a cat from Mississippi, you know, David Banner, you know. So That's what was dope, and I think that's why people fuck with y'all. I think that's why people still fuck with you today. By the way, Glasses Malone told me to say, tell them that nigga said, what's up? That's my nigga right there.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, Jim Malone told me to tell you what was happening, man. So now, you know, we moving on with the source. I'm trying to land on where we at today, right? Yeah. So we moving on with the source. Y'all go through all that. You don't have business partnerships. And then you have a coup kind of act, your own thing that you've built from the ground up. You have some motherfuckers from the inside that try to take what you created from you.
You talking about the walkout of the editorial staff in the 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, you know, that kind of goes back. Remember how I was saying that there was these beefs going on with the different artists, the Ice-T's and the Cypress Hills and shit like that? You know, I didn't support that because a lot of it was based on the editors starting to kind of like, you know, feel themselves and, you know, people starting to get, you know, thinking they were like the, you know, the celebrities and going back and forth with different artists on things. And like, I wasn't with that. So I would keep, you know, going and telling these guys like, you know, we can't do, you know, we shouldn't be doing this type of shit. And that, you know, it was getting worse and worse and different situations kept popping up. And, you know, these guys just weren't listening. And one of them was my business partner that owned a piece in the company that made it more difficult, you know, that type of thing. So we already were kind of at odds where they were trying to like sort of do the company the way they wanted to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And, around this time is when, Benzino's group gets signed to RCA Records. They got an album deal and, you know, we want to give them a little article in the magazine. So I go down to the editorial people and say, hey, you know, they got album deals coming out later this, whatever, a couple months, whatever it is, you know, can we get a little something? Oh man, fuck them. You know, we don't fuck with them. It's just whack. And you know, this, that, and the other. It was like some personal shit where, you know, they were mad at me. They were, you know, mad.
Cause you had something to do with it. So they felt like they was just going to diss it before they even heard it.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. And I kept trying a few times and finally it got to the point where I'm like, fuck this. It's my magazine. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to put an article in. And that's how that started. I put an article in. I got an article in the magazine that the editors didn't know about. When it came back from the printer and I went and showed it to them, like a couple of the guys just went crazy and started this whole coup. I mean, like sent out this letter, 5-page letter to everybody in the industry saying all kind of crazy shit. Oh, Dave Mays must resign. You know, he put an article about a group that he manages to try to make
fire
money.
Every last one of them motherfuckers.
This had the other, all this kind of stuff. They come to the office, they smoke weed in the office, and this, that, and the other. And these guys are terrible, blah, blah, blah. All kind of shit. It started all kind of stuff. And then got people to sign a petition, you know, to try to get me to step down. But yeah, eventually I basically just replaced everybody and the source went on and got bigger than it ever was.
And that's what you have to do sometimes, you know, because they had personal vendettas in your mind. And people like that are destructive. They're very destructive. If you don't watch them, if you let it slide, they'll fuck your company up. So let's keep on going. We gonna go on. I promise you, we gonna leave this source era to go to the new stuff.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. On Purpose's mission is to create impactful conversations to help you become happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating. You'll be laughing, crying, and have so many impactful takeaways after this interview.
I had this, like, you know, homie lover friend for a long time. He's very disrespectful to me, very kind of messed up to me. But in my mind, we could get married. We had the most beautiful babies. He handsome. I'm pretty. Like, it would be so cool. He's smart and intellectual. I'm kind of smart, I think. Like, it would be fun. We have the best conversations. Like, we have fun, but then he would treat me like crap.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
So, y'all have beef, which is a beef that starts a few bars get exchanged between Eminem and Benzino. Benzino put out a lot of a record, right? This and Eminem.
Right.
And so Eminem is an incredible artist. But I think a lot of points that Benzino had were valid points at the time. They were. You know, he gets away with certain shit that black artists can't get away with doing. You know what I mean? So y'all get this thing and Interscope, and they decide to, okay, we're not going to run no more ads in the magazine.
Right.
What was the feeling then, man? Because it seemed like that was just like, that was some major shit right there.
I mean, them pulling the ads or just the whole situation?
Just the whole situation, because I've never seen somebody take them getting criticized so personal. Mm-hmm. It was like other people, when you are an artist and you put your art on display, you go out there, put yourself out there, you're not just opening yourself up from the praise that you go garner from that. You're opening yourself up for any criticism. We doing this podcast. It might have 1,000 likes on that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be the one or two motherfuckers, or that was some bullshit.
I think it's one thing for criticism, but I think it's one thing when you have a personal issue with the way you feel about some situations, because you're saying that, you know, Eminem was able to get away with certain shit that, you know, regular artists couldn't pull, but shit, look at who the fuck he is. He was a big ass motherfucking diamond selling fucking artist.
That's true.
You get me?
Mm-hmm. A lot of them out the gate with that first.
A lot of motherfucking artists on that status can get away with a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. You get me?
Yeah.
And I just feel it. I mean, shit. Look at the shit Kanye do as a fucking black artist. You get me? He get away with a gang of shit that motherfuckers on a normal page would not be fucking with.
Yeah, it's true. But my thing is this, though, bro. How many artists do you see go try to shut down a whole magazine because somebody said something they didn't like? You're always going to have some criticism, and that was my thing with it.
You talk about the president.
Yeah, because
he's going to try to shut your shit down.
Because
shut their fucking shit down. Shut it down right now. You can't, of course.
And
we're supposed to be able to have freedom of speech. But really, can you have freedom of speech when motherfuckers are in power?
Yeah, because this seemed like that was just real personal with me, because he wasn't the first artist that y'all had comments about, you know what I mean? I might have said something derogatory about, and it didn't get to that level. But when it was him, it seemed like it was just a real, like, a lot of personal shit behind that, dog.
Well, first of all, like, you know, we did a lot to help Eminem in his career, you know, and help blow him up. Okay, he was in Unsigned Hype before he got his record deal. You know, we featured him in Unsigned Hype. He's the first white person, artist, anything ever to be on the cover of The Source, you know, after 10 plus years when he got a cover. He was the first white person ever on the cover. He won Lyricist of the Year at The Source Awards, I believe in 99.
Oh, he's a rapping motherfucker, dog. You can't dispute that. He's a rapping motherfucker.
So, you know, we really supported him for the first several years of his career. The situation really, you know, started around the time of the 8 Mile movie, And, you know, that was when kind of like the media was going into a whole nother level about Eminem. Like, you know, he's the king of hip hop. He's the greatest artist of all time. This movie, this, that, and the other, that type of thing. And I think that was the sentiment that kind of, you know, Benzino was talking to me about and kind of got under his skin a little bit of feeling like, you know, this is just too much. And this is kind of like reminded me of what happened with rock and roll and mm-hmm. Elvis and things like that. And we got to be, you know, so anyway, he vented by making a little diss record on a mixtape. And then, like you said, it just all of a sudden it escalated like mm-hmm. crazy. All kinds of shit was going on, you know, behind that. And, you know, one thing led to another. I mean, it definitely got personal, which, you know, mm-hmm. was not a good thing. But
and that's what I'm talking about right there. I don't think it was nothing wrong with him being upset or whatever like that. But I'm like, okay, now. And even you see in other situations, if someone says something against that dude, he takes it really personal. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you rich motherfucker. You just kick back. Fuck what that dude talking about. Do your thing.
Right.
Because he's the one thing you can't not dispute with him, and we ain't gonna get singed about Eminem, is he's a rapping motherfucker. He can rhyme his ass off. He can rhyme. But it's a whole bunch of other rhyming motherfuckers, too. You got Xeno XL. You got Razzcast, dudes that rap just as good as him, but never got the thing because he had a push. He was the, you know, a lot of people bought Eminem albums that didn't necessarily fuck with rap. A lot of them sales wasn't necessarily from the hip-hop community. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. So we get that. Now, my main question with that is, you get Interscope.
That's because he started pleasing to that side. When Eminem first came out to me, he was rapping. You know, I'm Slim Shady and that type of shit. When you start doing records about niggas killing themselves over you and shit like that, you're crossing over to a different side, okay? So, of course, those other motherfuckers, you don't think motherfuckers outside of hip-hop start gravitating to a motherfucker who's ready to commit suicide over a nigga? That's some other shit. You get me? Mm-hmm. That's some other side.
But another part of that is, like, you know, because they try to say that, like, that Eminem made hip-hop bigger by bringing in a new audience. And, you know, my thing is, you know, any rapper before Eminem, all the black artists that went platinum, multi-platinum, you know, the majority of their audience was white consumers. Mm-hmm.
You got damn right.
Since Run DMC all the way up. So that wasn't like a new thing, you know, for like all of a sudden all these white people to be buying hip hop. You know what I mean? So.
But like you said, in my opinion, you ain't listening to black hip-hop artists talk about how motherfuckers are stalking him and ready to kill him and kidnap him over shit and ready to drive cars off of bridges in the rain because you don't recognize them as being a fucking fan. Mm-hmm. You don't get niggas to do that type of shit. When you connect with that type of motherfucker, it's some motherfuckers sitting up really like that.
Yeah.
That's when you start reaching a different side. So I get what you're saying. It's cool to have your opinion about, but goddamn, you get me? Like you're feeling like, okay, this motherfucker taking our art form. He's taking our, but then, like you said, a motherfucker could rap like a motherfucker. Yeah, there was no disputing that at first. Mm-hmm. There was no problem at first. You get me? And a lot of motherfuckers gravitated to him because Dr. Dre stepped in.
Oh, you get me? And
before Dre stepped in, he had shit that was mediocre. When Dre came in and gave him the two songs, it took him there, mm-hmm. straight up. So I get it. You can have that opinion, but like you said, it's personal because I don't think a lot of people were looking at it to where that's what media is going to do, though. Mm-hmm. Media is going to go, he's the great white hope. He's here to save hip hop. They don't like hip hop anyway. Mm-hmm. So why not piss a motherfucker off and go, the white boy is here to save hip hop? Of course.
And you know, the thing is, I was working for a publishing company as A&R one time, and the company I was working for was based in London. So I'm sitting out there listening to their 19-year-old son tell me about hip hop. We had dinner one night. He say, well, Eminem saved hip hop. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you know, he saved hip hop. So fuck Chuck D and fuck Public Enemy and KRS-One and all these other people. Is Eminem, you should say he brought it to your attention. Yeah. That was the first one getting your attention.
The motherfuckers don't know how to speak still. Yeah. Youngsters don't know how to speak. You have to ask them who the greatest of all time, and they gonna say some shit like right. that. Especially when they don't come from your official era. You get me?
That's what I'm saying. So you get all this advertising money, and other people started following suit. Other record companies started kind of following suit because they didn't want to look like they was going against it. Because Interscope at that time was the shit. They was the machine. They had everything over there.
Yeah, but I mean, Universal Music Group, you know, owned Interscope, owned mm-hmm. Def Jam, owned Universal Records. They had maybe 70, 80% of the market. So, but, you know, another thing about that is, you know, at this time, you know, the Source is getting advertising dollars from so many types of companies, cars, soft drinks, sneakers, fast food.
So it didn't matter.
Advertising was a small amount.
So you wasn't tripping?
No.
So that's why you was able to react to what you did was like, fuck you then.
Right. It didn't, that didn't mean nothing, mm-hmm. you know.
And so, you know, I manage Glasses Malone, and he's on Clubhouse the other night. He's in the room, and we ain't gonna go into the detail. I guess Royce was in his feelings because you was in there. Y'all having a cordial conversation, and I guess he kicked you off the stage, whatever, right? Because of that, man, all that stuff is still going on to this day. Is still that much animosity and resentment?
I not on my end, you know, I don't have any animosity or resentment about anything.
Oh, it's not, obviously not you, you know, between other people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that was just, I don't know. He just, I said something, he took an offense and he started, you know, talking a bunch of stuff. And then he basically just hung the phone up on me, you know, on Clubhouse, cut me off. And talking shit after he cut me off.
That's a whole other conversation.
You know, I don't care about that.
We get off
of something I really wanted to do. I don't know how I got into that room that night. But
well, man, you launching the podcast network. Ain't no such thing as bad advertising. That shit was everywhere. I'm gonna tell you this, man. We could do an episode here talking about a cure for AIDS, talking about a guaranteed cure for cancer, and talk about peace and all that shit. That shit won't get no attention. But if we got somebody in here talking about who got their head busted or whose wife got plugged, man, it's going to be all over the place. So sometimes, you know, it's like, hey, it's what it is, man. So let's think about this, man. You've already accomplished something that was like, you know, that's going to go down in history. The Source Magazine will be remembered 200 years from now. It's going to be spoken on. When they look, when they go do classes up in Harvard, Yale, and all that, or wherever they're doing school at, however they're doing school in the future, they go talk about it right now. You got your new venture, man, that you launched, man. You jumping in the podcast game, man. You have a podcast network.
Yeah, yeah. It's called Breakbeat. Mm-hmm. It's a hip-hop podcast network. Right now we have 8 different podcasts going, different types of podcasts. So we're doing some that are, you know, visual talk, discussion format type podcasts, mm-hmm. sort of like, you know, these, that's what we're doing. But we're also doing, you know, more of the journalistic, you know, narrative storytelling produced mm-hmm. style of podcasts, you know, so.
So you're doing scripted stuff over there too. Scripted. That's dope. I'm working on one right now.
Yeah.
He's at, them two actually gonna be in. They don't know it yet, but they gonna be in it, you know, so.
That was good.
Yeah.
Good. So I got like a couple of hosts that I think are amazing. One is Don't Call Me White Girl. She's from Philly. That's our first podcast. Mm-hmm. Some of y'all know her. Well, most people know about Why You Being Weird to Me. You know about
actually, that? Yeah, I'm hip to old girl. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So yeah, she started all that, and she was on $1 million worth of Game last year as a co-host with Gillian Wallow for a few months, and she was killing it on there. She's just super funny, but super smart. Mm-hmm. I think she's going to be one of the most successful kind of female hosts and talent in the game, and not too long. So I call her like one of my unsigned hypes of Breakbeat. You know, podcasting is an industry that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, interesting things going on, but it's a place where, you know, new talent can be discovered, new voices, new perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
A podcast network is kind of like the digital magazine that everybody's been trying to figure out how to do for years. You know, you hear that word, term, digital magazine, but it's never, you know, we've never read a digital magazine, but a podcast network has all the different sections, you know, again, the music, the fashion, the politics, the health, the, you know, sports, you know, we'll be covering all of these things. But just with that hip hop, you know, style, perspective, point of view, you know, Funny Marco is the other one I would call like my unsigned hype. Most of you, you know, you guys probably.
Yeah, I'm hip to Funny Marco. Yeah.
You know, he's funny as shit. And I just think he has a certain, you know, comedic style that can be brought into the podcast world. And I think he's going to get even bigger. We just started shooting his podcast in Atlanta last week. White Girl, Don't Call Me White Girl, has been out already now. That's on our YouTube. You can check out the first few episodes of her show. It's doing really, really well. You know, I'm coming with my podcast, The Dave Mays Show. I'm going to be recording that in Chicago every week starting like next month. You know, just me in conversations with, you know, different influential people from the culture, you know, giving people a chance to hear more of my point of view on things, more of my experiences, you know, even doing this like here tonight and the things I'm doing now is somewhat new for me. I was always like more of a behind the scenes type of person. I didn't really want to get the, you know, the attention or the limelight. You know, I was just about building the business. But, you know, it's a different world now. I feel like, you know, I have an important story of what I've done that needs to be known and documented in the past, but also, you know, an important voice that I think, you know, people will, you know, benefit or enjoy hearing in a lot of different, you know, ways through the podcast that I'm going to launch as well. Then, you know, on the scripted side, I want to talk about the two projects we have going so far. One is the story of the unsigned hype column in The Source. Let me get this water.
That's dope.
That's an 8-part series where we'll tell, you know, the whole backstory of the unsigned hype, how it was created, how we found these different artists, how they got their record deals, all the people that was working on those situations. That's coming out great. And then the other one is the Larry Hoover story. You know, we're doing his life story as a 10-part series. Now, this is the first time that the family has ever participated in the telling of his story. So it's not going to be one of the, you know, same old story about Larry Hoover that you have ever gotten out there.
I used to have conversations with Larry. He used to call my house.
Really?
A few years back in probably about 95, wow. 96.
Yeah.
He used to call me at my house.
What were those conversations like?
I knew his son. Yeah, it's back when they was trying to start the little clothing line they had back. Yeah,
that ghetto prisoner.
Yes. So, yeah, I used to talk to him all the time. He used to just call me and we would have just conversations.
Good conversations, good, right? Good
dude. Yeah. That's dope, man, because what they did to him is a travesty, man. It's like, and I think what our government does sometimes, man, people that are influential, because, see, I don't think he got put in jail for actual crimes. I think he got put sent away for the influence that he has.
Absolutely.
Because
and in the politics, I mean, he's the only person in our culture, you know, in the urban culture, any kind of, you know, black gangster type figure that's ever, you know, really been serious about politics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want you to know. About that, what he was doing, that 21st century vote, they were making impact out there, like politically, and it was growing, and you know, yeah, that's
yeah, he definitely, man, because you know, you kind of need. I truly believe if he was out, a lot of this stuff, because you can't prevent 100% of everything, but I think if he was out, he has enough respect that some of the stuff that's happening in Chicago wouldn't be happening.
Yeah, I think it would be a positive thing. And
it would definitely be a positive thing.
You know, I've gotten to know his family really well. And, you know, he deserves to be out and be able to spend some time with his family. So hopefully what we're doing in telling his story in a really accurate, in-depth way like we're doing, you know, it's going to contribute, you know, to that.
Yeah, you get to talk to Jay Prince.
Do people still think he a threat?
Oh,
the government?
Yeah, they won't let him out. I mean, he has every legal right to be out now. You know, he's qualified on a few different bases with the reform laws that happened. A lot of people on his case all are out. And, you know, they've kept him, you know, because they have a vendetta, really.
And where he's based at, James, it's like on the inside of a mountain or some shit like that in Colorado.
He's in a Supermax.
Yeah, he's like inside
El
of a
Chapo
mountain.
And the Unabomber. I was out there. I didn't get to go in, but I was out there a couple of months ago with his family while they were visiting him.
And that gives you an idea, man, of what they think about him, man. They put him in Supermax with El Chapo and the Unabomber. They're saying he's a threat because he can possibly point those guys in the direction that they need to go in and see. That's what I tell people a lot of times from out of town. There is no king of L.A. Ain't no shot caller right here. Some motherfuckers don't give a fuck. They don't respect the motherfucker, right? But maybe if it was that one person that everybody was just scared to fuck up, shit wouldn't be the way it is. You know, you always have to have somebody that's willing to, that's not only feared, man, love, but respected. You know what I mean? Because it's a difference. If somebody's scared of you, they just go kill you. Straight up. You know, you get killed by somebody. If somebody's scared of you, you'll die. When people respect you, it's a whole different thing. You know, and I think he has the respect to where a lot of this stuff wouldn't be happening and going down. And I think that's dope that y'all are doing that, man. So how many shows do you have total now on the network to launch it off?
Eight.
So you got those eight.
We'll be looking for more. We're already planning on the next round.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah. You can, you know, check us out on all the podcast apps, on our Breakbeat Media YouTube, and, you know, our website, breakbeatmedia.com. We got this show, Trapping Anonymous. I don't want to forget about that. Trapping Anonymous is a dope-ass show. Yeah, it was actually out. He was doing it independently for a while as an audio podcast, and it got picked up by Tidal.
Yeah, I remember that kid. I actually tried to sign him when he first, like, this is when I was young with Digital Soapbox. It was one of the most, like, it was some dope shit, man.
Yeah,
it was some real dope shit.
It's crazy. He does amazing interviews. And so now we made a visual version with him. So,
yeah.
You know, you blur out the person's face and their voice.
It was Trapped Anonymous. He really talking to motherfuckers that's getting it in. I heard that shit. I was like, what the hell is this shit? Yeah. I'm gonna try to see if I could, I'm going to find it. Has he released it yet?
Yeah, not the new ones. We're going to release this, you know, probably also in the next few weeks. So that's coming.
Because he's from New York, right?
He's from Brooklyn, yeah.
Yeah, because I know it was some other shit. But, yeah, he does some good shit. I'm glad you picked him up, man. Yeah,
thanks.
And if you, yeah, we go, like, definitely we can have him on here anytime. He's more than welcome, too, dog. He's more than welcome to come on here. You'll like him.
Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, you'll like him, man. So, as far as your podcast network, are you guys doing it independently? Or are you partnered up with some people?
It's independent. I have, you know, the one business partner I think I mentioned as from D.C., my man, his name is Kendrick Ashton. He and I are partners. We have some strategic partners. This company named Dax that's owned by Global Media in UK. Dax is...
Dax is dope. I'm hip to them.
Yep. They do, you know, audio advertising, sales. So they're helping us bring in all the sponsors and ads on the podcast on the audio side. And then PRX is also a partner. PRX is a really well-respected podcast publisher.
They got another dope podcast that's over there, too, where they go talk to the brothers in jail and they let them tell their stories. They actually had her co-host for the longest, James, was a guy that was locked up. And they was doing this show, like, remotely. And he was her co-host. And they tell different people that's locked up. And I forget the name of the podcast.
I wish I could remember.
Yeah, I can't remember it, man. But it's a dope podcast, man. And it's so much. And that's the thing about the audio. That's why I'm so, like, I don't know if you were in here earlier, but I was telling Brian, leave the mics where they at. Because I'm really big on sound. Because I had to remind people, first and foremost, we are a podcast. The video stuff is cool, but we a podcast. You know, we got a lot of truck drivers. Shout out to my truck drivers out there that's listening to the show, driving down those freeways, bringing us the stuff across the country. We get a lot of love from the truck drivers, man, from the truckers. You know, people in their cars, people at home.
And people who just stuck, period, in their cars, their vehicles.
A lot of people
tell me, like, man, I listen to y'all all the time, man.
Mm-hmm. My boy Flip, he be on it in his truck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, shouts out to Flip.
Yeah, we got a guy. We actually got some truckers that's about to start putting our logos on the side of the thing. Like, I'm talking about, like, on the house. They just showing love, man. And that's the great thing about communication. It goes back to communication to have a message. You know, like, now, like, back then, it wasn't cool for the CEO, for the boss to have, you know, to be in front. But now with this right now, you almost have to.
Right.
Because you have a message.
That's Right.
That you got to get out, and can't nobody tell your story better than you can, homeboy.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know?
I'm here.
You feel what I'm saying? No, can't nobody.
Me now. No, sir. I'm going to be out here.
Yeah, so are you guys doing anything, like as far as your podcast, you guys got people from all around the country now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got two podcasts going in Chicago. I got one in Philly, two in New York, one in Atlanta. And I'm out here next couple of days trying to close up another situation out here. So I have one or two shows going in L.A. soon as well.
No, for sure, man. Anything that we can do to help you, man, with that, you know, going on, you partnered up with some good people, man. Anything we can do to help, man, you a friend, so.
Definitely.
Right. Yeah. So we got you.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, I've been watching what you guys have been doing with this show and what you were doing with the network and everything like that, so I'm glad we got a chance to connect, and I'm sure we'll find some things we can do together going forward.
No, for sure, man, for sure. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you, man, with doing this podcast network, your last project, man, was pretty big. Everything you've done has pretty much been successful. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you ever feel any pressure going into this, man? Like, man, I'm the dude to start the source, man. This podcast network got to crack off.
I mean, there's a little bit, but I just believe in what I've been doing. I've always believed in, you know, my vision for these companies that I've been building. But this is one that, you know, I just feel like this can be bigger than anything that I've ever done before. Mm-hmm. I just think for a lot of reasons, hip hop is bigger than it's ever been. You know, mm-hmm. It's now spans three generations. So the size of the audience globally everywhere is enormous. You know, we're at this kind of, you know, point in the media business where like the playing field is kind of leveled. You know, these big mm-hmm. companies don't have kind of strategic advantages
and that
they once did. Yeah.
I love it.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, we have a technology side to Breakbeat that we've been developing. And so next year, you know, we'll plan to, you know, release some, you know, technology things, a Breakbeat app, that kind of situation. You know, mm-hmm. it's part of the future plans of growth of the company as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the podcast network is really the building block. You know, podcasting is just, it's such a powerful medium right now. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's the highest advertising rates of any mm-hmm. form of media mm-hmm. right now. I mean, it combines like, you know, so many different things. I just think it has a big future and a big upside because a lot of people, you know, still aren't regular podcast consumers. So
yeah. And even if they don't think they are, it's rolling into it because, you know, one thing I had to really, because I've been doing this for so long, I was really just like against those things at first, the cameras and stuff like that. I wanted to keep it all audio. So the first 15 episodes of Gangsta Chronicles, as far as a visual, it ain't no visual. It was all audio. You know what I mean? They still some of our most listened to episodes. But I think now as we deal with this generation, they're more visible. And with the advent of these things right here, the video is, you know, the video is introducing a lot more people because I was just kind of checking out one day. I was messing around with the fans on YouTube, and I kept, dude inboxed me and said, man, how come y'all always just release 5-minute clips of the show? I want to listen to the whole thing. I said, I've been for a few years, and y'all always just put out 5 minutes. Why don't y'all do a whole show? I said, bro, I sent him the link to Apple. I said, you can go listen to all these in full right there. He didn't know nothing about those.
Right.
But that's
right.
What I'm saying. So you think about it, it's like it's, you have to put it out on all formats now.
That's right.
Or you may miss something, man. So what's the URL to the website, the Breakbeats, man?
It's breakbeatmedia.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, man, for all those fans out there, don't be sending my man to no trashy links, man, to y'all podcast. Make sure they tight for you sending this to the dude that invented the source.
Yeah, we're looking, man. We're looking for new shows, new talent, you know what I mean? So, yeah, please, you know, check out what we're doing and, you know, let us know what you got going on. I mean, we're not doing music per se yet. As you guys know, it's hard, you know, it's kind of hard to incorporate music into podcasting because
right.
We don't have the licensing, you know, in place. You know, so I'm looking at different ways, you know, that we will incorporate music. Obviously, we have guests, you know, we will have shows. You know, Funny Marco's got a bunch of, you know, different artists that are guests on his show. And we're about to start bringing in some guests for Don't Call Me White Girl and things like that. And those would be platforms where, you know, new artists. Even my show, you know, I'm going to try to figure out how I can highlight up and coming talent, you know, within my podcast.
I think that would be dope, man.
All right.
Well, man, we really appreciate you having you on here, man.
Yeah.
And man, you can come back anytime, dog. Yeah,
I will.
You can come back anytime, man.
Thanks for having me.
You know what I'm saying? Dope conversation, man. Well, that's it, man. It's another episode of Gangsta Chronicles, man.
Y'all,
we end it like that, man.
Man, I'm glad to be back at work, goddamn.
Yeah, hell yeah, because we had a hiatus. I wanted to tell y'all, we back on hiatus. So we back off of hiatus, so y'all can stay out my inbox. We are back on. Can't take a break. We had to take
a
break.
All y'all people, stop worrying, stop wondering.
I was getting them texts too, man. Where y'all at? I ain't shit.
Yeah, I had a motherfucker cuss me out. He said, man, still. You fuck them up, man. They always hit me because, like, they know you fucking up, dog. I got this one dude, man, shot. I ain't going to put his name out there so everybody blow him up. But he's one of those fans that from the very beginning, he kind of went with me. Then when we went through the split, he had his opinions about the stuff. And he said, well, you're doing a good job, man. Keep it going. But then if something happens, still, you got to tighten that shit up. Tell whoever that is breathing on the microphone to cut that shit out. So I like to call him the silent engineer. Shout out to my dude, man.
Right.
But we out of here, man.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find a purple mic on the front of your screen, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles podcast are Norman Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Tyler. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt, and our audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of iHeart Media Network and the Black Effect Podcast Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Gangster Chronicles is brought to you by the
Got my Prevnar 20 shot. It's a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine. For us wise folks, it helps protect.
I'm 19, strong.
And asthmatic, and at higher risk. Get vaccinated.
But
nothing when grandma speaks.
Grandson listens.
19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, or chronic heart disease, or 65 plus, you may be at higher risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Prevnar 20 can help protect you with just one dose.
Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't give Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Ask your doctor or pharmacist about getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20, even if you've already received another pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.